Greetings once again to all of you out there from right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you back with us, and you should be thankful that I'm alive, because I risked life and limb today hanging up the Christmas lights. First off, right at the top, I want to thank the Lord for providing a beautiful 50-degree day. Sunny, here in the beautiful Denver metropolitan area, so that Dad could hang up the Christmas lights for the kids. And after just a few blown fuses, they're all glittering and alight out there. And it's just lovely. But, balancing that ladder, certain portions of the yard, and trying to get the top of the tree there in the front yard, I'll give you an example. My 9-year-old daughter was standing, we're on about a 30-degree incline off the side of the house, the ladder is slanted over her, she's holding the ladder, I'm standing on the second rung from the top, holding onto the shingling on the top of the house, trying to staple these lights up, and I realized that if this ladder falls, it's going to crush my 9-year-old daughter. And I said, Nicole, if you feel the ladder start to fall, just get out of the way, let Daddy fall. Please, don't sacrifice yourself for the sake of Daddy. But somehow I maintain my balance, which I try to do in my life. And we got the lights up. And so now we're in full festive Christmas spirit here at the McBurney compound. And I want to invite you all to partake of the Christmas spirit, because it's something that connects us to our past, going way, way back. Way, way back. Anyway, and I feel like there's not enough people, at least on our street, who care about Christmas. I mean, we got some pagans up the street. Their house they light their house up like Christmas, for crying out loud. And then we got some other government workers with an Obama sticker still on their car. They light their house up. So as genuine Christians who actually believe in the reason for the season, we feel like we have to put up a good showing. And besides, the kids love it. But interestingly enough, our 3-year-old, who's Zoe, I told her last night, I said, we're going to hang up those Christmas lights tomorrow. And so first thing this morning, the very first thing she said to my extremely attractive audio engineer was, are we going to hang up those Christmas lights? And then about every 15 minutes thereafter, are we going to hang up those Christmas lights? Well, let me have my coffee. Let me wake up. Let us get our act together. We are going to hang up the Christmas lights. So after a couple of hours, we got out there. I got out there with Zoe. We started unbundling the bunch of Christmas lights. I don't know how else to describe it. And within 5 minutes, she said, okay, Daddy, I'm going to take a break. I never saw her again. Never saw her again until the lights. And then when we lit the lights, of course, then she wanted to see them. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's get to the serious news of the week here. This is, after all, the Weekly Worldview, the heart of conservative talk, the heartbeat of conservative talk on the Internet. And I know that you expect me to cover the news of the week. So let's go. Let's start in Sierra Blanca, Texas. And let me just set the scene for you. You're a deputy sheriff in Sierra Blanca. You're sitting in your car. There's a chill in the air. And you're thinking to yourself, you're pondering your career as a deputy sheriff in Sierra Blanca, because there's rumors. Layoffs may be coming. You haven't had a lot of activity lately. And you're thinking, well, maybe I need to find some way to justify my job to my boss. I mean, them layoffs are coming, and it's a scary thought to lose my gig. And you take a sip of your iced tea and pop the top button on your trousers, take a big old bite of your pecan pie. And just then, Willie Nelson tour bus rolls up. The door slides open, and like a scene out of This Is Spinal Tap, the marijuana smoke hits you in the face. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Associated Press, Willie Nelson has been charged with marijuana possession after nearly... I'm serious, yes. Shocking as it may be, Willie Nelson, at nearly a half a pound of marijuana, was found in his tour bus there in Sierra Blanca, Texas, and somewhere there's a deputy sheriff who is happy as all get out. That bus rolled up, the door rolled open, and he went, hot dog, I think I got it figured out. Anyway, what happened here? The bus pulled into Sierra Blanca about 9 a.m. last Friday, and the officer smelled marijuana when the door opened. And, well, they searched the bus, and they found nearly half a pound of marijuana. Man, talk about low-hanging fruit. I mean, searching Willie Nelson's tour bus for marijuana, like shooting fish in a barrel. Anyway, Willie, well, that's all we have. I mean, a half a pound of marijuana, I'm not sure if Willie never in here says that it's medicine. Now, they don't classify marijuana in Texas as medicine yet. And Willie Nelson, how old is he now? He's got to be in his 70s. Well, it doesn't say here in the story, but I mean, Willie Nelson was old when I started listening to him. So he's really old, and he's still smoking dope. And there's nothing worse than an old guy smoking dope or doing anything else that's nefarious, because it's just a bad lesson for the young kids. You know, Willie is the exception to the rule, because Willie is in an industry where you can be a pothead and a loser and still make a fantastic living. But for all you young folks out there, I want you to keep in mind that if you do start smoking dope, you might end up a pothead when you're 70 years old, and things are likely not going to work out as well for you, at least financially, as they have for Willie Nelson. Now, we don't know what kind of shape Willie's spirit's in. We don't know where Willie's at as far as his relationship to the Creator. But we do know that Willie Nelson is a net negative influence on the culture in general. We're not thankful, but there is at least one deputy sheriff down in Sierra Blanca who's genuinely pleased that Willie Nelson is around. So we thank you for that, Willie. All right, now let's move on. Into the culture file, I want to start in the culture file with a commentary on the state of religion in post-Christian Western civilization. Tony Blair, this is according to the Telegraph out in London, Tony Blair was on a panel in front of an audience there in Toronto, Canada, with Christopher Hitchens. Christopher Hitchens, you'll remember, has esophageal cancer and is days, weeks away from meeting his maker. Tony Blair was defending religious faith in a very generic sense, even though I think he's a Catholic. Let me see here. Yeah, he converted to Catholicism sometime after he got out of office. So he's somewhat religious. Whereas Christopher Hitchens, well, according to the Telegraph, skeptic Christopher Hitchens, who has terminal cancer, he likened God to a celestial dictatorship, a kind of divine North Korea. And according to the Telegraph, Christopher Hitchens appeared to win over the audience, which voted 2-1 in his favor following the debate. So Christopher Hitchens, on his deathbed practically, defeats the hapless Tony Blair in a debate over a religion in general. Let's see here. Mr. Blair... Here, let's listen now. If Tony Blair is the spokesperson for religion, well, my goodness, perhaps all is lost. I mean, we're talking about Tony Blair. Not exactly a paragon of religious virtue as far as I've ever known. But he says of religion, Tony says, it can be destructive. It can also create a deep well of compassion and frequently does. He said that a common thread running through all faiths was, quote, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, unquote. And I'm thinking, what other faiths, Tony, is that a common thread of? I believe that's from the Christian Bible, if I'm not mistaken. But what other faiths, Tony, are based on do unto others as you would have them do unto you? And he continued, quote, faith answers a profound spiritual yearning, something we feel and sense instinctively. Well, but Mr. Hitchens did not agree. By the way, I prayed for Mr. Hitchens. I've given up praying for Chris Hitchens. I'm praying that he's taken quickly before he pollutes any other young minds. Christopher Hitchens, 61, and on death's door, said, quote, once you assume a creator and a plan, it makes us objects in a cruel experiment whereby we are created sick and commanded to be well. And over us, to supervise this, is installed a celestial dictatorship, a kind of divine North Korea. And I'm certainly not going to bow down. I added that last part. But Chris apparently is not going to bow down. Well, at least not in this life. You know, there's a line in the Bible that says, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess he is Lord. Speaking of Jesus Christ. And I just have a feeling Christopher Hitchens is going to be one of those on the other side who bows down, not in worship, but in fear and realization that he was wrong. And he will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, but he will not trust him, even on that day. And Jesus Christ will dispatch him to the place Christopher Hitchens wants to be, and that's anywhere where Jesus Christ is not. That's where Christopher Hitchens wants to go. Now, unfortunately, that place is not going to be very pleasant for Mr. Hitchens, but Mr. Hitchens has chosen to go there. And far be it from Jesus Christ to do anything against the will of one Christopher Hitchens. Maybe Jesus will be able to tell him, I'm not a dictator, Chris. You don't have to hang out with me. See you later. Pull the switch. Off goes Chris. Let's see here. I don't think I want to do anything more on that. Tony Blair versus Christopher Hitchens. I'm not so sure how well Tony Blair is going to fare on Judgment Day, frankly. Catholicism or no. But let's move on, because there are other important stories. From the culture file, the economics section, according to Bloomberg, the borrowing costs for Europe's most indebted nations are at record highs, as Ireland's capitulation in accepting a bailout of its banking industry stokes concerns that other countries in the EU will also have to seek aid. There was a brief rally in the markets after the November 22nd the financial bailout of Ireland, but that rally was short-lived, according to Bloomberg. The support for the markets proved transient. Irish bond yields, well, they fell 4 points, but then they jumped 104 points. Yeah. So according to Michel De Bruin from S&T, FNC, Netherlands and Amsterdam, one of these financial conglomerates, Michel says, quote, when Ireland accepted help, the general feeling in the market was that this could restore some calm. That hasn't been the case. Oh, and now we've got Portugal in the wings here, and Spain. Oh boy, Portugal says that the EU cannot impose a bailout on his country, as the country's gone broke, threatens to drag the whole EU community down with it. But they're resisting, at least, you know, giving the impression that they're resisting the bailouts. But they're all going to have to be bailed out. And then what happens after the bailout when everybody's still broke? And everybody's still spending like a drunken sailor on both sides of the Atlantic? I mean, I guess we turn to Asia for the ultimate bailout. The European Central Bank, according to Bloomberg, is putting pressure on Portugal to accept aid intended to stop the financial contagion from spreading to Spain. So remember, I told you about the pigs, Portugal, Ireland. What was the G? I can't remember now. Portugal, Ireland, somebody in Spain. Oh, Greece. Well, Greece has already gone down the pike there. Anyway, the pigs are rearing their ugly heads. And, financially, I'm generally pessimistic about the short-term, near future. But I think that, I hope that soon there is going to be a chance to just clear the decks of all this debt and all this overspending. And, just reset things. Oh, Cindy, how right you are. Do you think she knew how prophetic she was? I don't know if she wrote this song. Is this a cover? I'll have to look into that. But anyways, how right you are, Cindy. From St. Petersburg, Russia, from China Daily, China and Russia have decided to renounce the U.S. dollar and resort to using their own currencies for bilateral trade. That's trade between each other. They're going to use rubles and yuan, or renminbi. I'm not sure which the Chinese... Do the Chinese have two currencies? What's the deal there? They got the yuan, and then they got the renminbi. Anyway, they're going to trade with Russia in their own denominations of currency because they've lost confidence in the dollar. Chinese experts, according to China Daily, which is China and the government, Chinese experts say the move reflected closer relationship between Beijing and Moscow, and is not aimed at challenging the dollar, but to protect their own domestic economies. Vladimir Putin met with Wen Ho Cho Chi, something, where's his name here? Wen Ho Li, I don't know. He met with somebody named Wen over there in China. Actually, they met in Russia. They had a signing ceremony. They signed a number of documents, including energy cooperation, aviation, railroad construction, customs, protecting intellectual property, culture, and a joint communique. So China and Russia, the bear and the tiger, are getting a buddy-buddy over there. And apparently Mr. Wen, his trip to Russia follows Russian President Dmitry Medvedev's three-day trip to China back in September, during which he and President Hu Jintao launched a cross-border pipeline linking the world's biggest energy producer, that being Russia, with the largest energy consumer, that being the tiger there over in China. Wen said at the press conference that the partnership between Beijing and Moscow has, quote, reached an unprecedented level, unquote, and he pledged the two countries will never become each other's enemy. Well, I would never say never, Mr. Jintao. But I don't know. I mean, America doesn't have the will. Here's the thing about Russia and China. We had proxy wars with Russia and proxy wars with China in the last century. And we didn't have the will or the nerve, the guts, or the wherewithal to stop them and destroy their evil, wicked, corrupt, destructive, antichrist regimes. And so America will likely, at some point in the future, succumb to them because we didn't meet the challenge of 50 years ago. And you know, people wonder, why is it that China, which is overall, China is still a communist country, but why is it that they are such an economic force to be reckoned with, especially in the last decade and the predictions for the next decade? What is it about China? And I'll tell you what I think it is. It's that they've got a billion people, a billion plus. They've got more people than we do. Despite the fact that they've butchered the better part of this present generation, they've got a billion two, something like that. So they've liberalized their economic program and allowed a modicum of freedom and liberty for a small segment of their population, maybe a quarter of their population, maybe a fifth. And that equals the entire population of the United States. So they can keep 750 million slaves, liberalize for a quarter of a billion party members, and become a force to be reckoned with because they have more people. Proving the axiom that more people is a good thing. And so we'll keep following that and see what happens with China as the tiger begins to roar and sidles up with the bear over there. And here in the United States, I mean, we're just, it's as if our best days are behind us. It's almost as if we're over the hill and we're pretty young. The country's barely 300 years old, not even 300 years old. Anyway, it's just sad to watch. Anyway, speaking of sad, this is just, I mean, Haiti. Let's go to Haiti from Newsmax. Haiti's deadly cholera epidemic is spreading faster than originally estimated and is likely to result in hundreds of thousands of cases and could last up to a year. Since the disease first appeared in mid-October, it's killed over 1,300 people. And we have a quote here from the unhumanitarian coordinator there in Haiti. He said the real death toll might be higher than the 1,300 being reported. He said probably over 2,000 because we haven't heard from all the remote, destitute areas of Haiti, which is almost all of Haiti. Man, I mean, it makes you wonder. What the people in Haiti have been beset by a series of epic, biblical proportion tragedies over the past few years. And it just makes you wonder, what's going on down there? Why? I mean, I'm certain there are some decent, hardworking people in Haiti. But I don't know. I think there's more voodoo freaks. And, well, the country's just a basket case. And on top of all this, the UN is in there. The UN, as I like to call them. They're in there trying to help the poor Haitians. And the according to this story from Newsmax, the anti-cholera campaign has been complicated by unconfirmed reports that un-peacekeepers from Nepal brought cholera into Haiti. They hadn't had a case of cholera in Haiti for about 100 years. Suddenly, the un-peacekeepers come in to help. And, well, all of a sudden, they've got a cholera outbreak. But then again, they've got a million people living in tents and squalor, and they get hit with a hurricane, and oh, it's just the humanity. It's really sad. Really sad. Okay, now let's move on from something that's genuinely tragic to something that kind of makes you say, huh? Say what? That's from the Science Really file. And the story is in the Netherlands. Apparently, there's been a study. According to a recent study there in the Netherlands, radiation from Wi-Fi networks is harmful to trees. Yeah. Yeah. They say, according to the study, it causes significant variations in growth as well as bleeding from the trees and fissures in the bark. in the Netherlands, about 70% of all trees, this is according to PC World online, PCWorld.com. In the Netherlands, about 70% of all trees in urban areas show symptoms of this illness, compared with only 10% of the trees 5 years ago, and the connection has apparently been made to wireless internet. Well, they studied, they exposed 20 ash trees to various radiation sources for 3 months, and the trees placed closest to the Wi-Fi radio demonstrated that, a dying of the upper and lower epidermis of the leaves. And the study also found that Wi-Fi radiation could inhibit the growth of corn cobs. Corn cobs, I said. Okay. And researchers have urged further studies. Now, I just don't know about all this. I mean, it seems like mankind has been emitting radio frequencies for, well, the better part of 100 years now. And for the trees in the Netherlands to suddenly will be showing symptoms, well, I don't know how they make that connection. But I'm not a scientist. But one thing I've noticed about these scientists lately, whenever they come out with these studies, the story always ends with, researchers have encouraged further studies. So I wonder if these studies are government-funded. And that as long as the researchers encourage and urge further studies, they'll always have something to do, like going out and, shooting radio waves at trees and doing other make-work projects in the socialist utopia there in the Scandinavian North. Anyway, I'm just not sure I buy it, but I'm not going to dismiss it out of hand. It's like the whole cell phone causes brain cancer type. I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I hope not. I went to Bluetooth, and before Bluetooth even, I had the earpiece with the wire on it, just for my own convenience. I got addicted to that, and so hopefully I haven't been, you know, focusing radio waves into my brain housing group. But I had never thought about the trees, and if I have offended the trees, I sincerely apologize. No harm was intended. All right. Now, from the Real Science File, because this is real, and this is scary, from New York, the Associated Press, for only the second time, the U.S. government has approved a test in people of a treatment using embryonic stem cells. This time it's for a disease that causes vision loss. Advanced Cell Technology out in Santa Monica, California, said the research should begin early next year. Scientists hope to use stem cells to create a variety of tissues for transplant. But, notes the Associated Press, human embryos have to be destroyed to harvest those cells, which has made their use controversial. Controversial, to say the least. In the new study, 12 patients will be treated with healthy scavenger cells created in a laboratory from human embryonic stem cells. And the folks at Advanced Cell Technology, well, they hope that they're going to help. They're going to help with what's this disease they're treating? I didn't mark this up. Stargardt disease, which affects about 30,000 Americans, it causes vision loss, and they're hoping to see some improvement in visual acuity. They say that improvement would be a bonus. That's a bonus derived from the killing and devouring of innocent children by researchers, scientists, and, the people who are participating. I don't know. If I go blind and they say, hey, if you eat these babies, you might could see again, I would pass. I mean, I think so. I hope so. I hope you would, too. I mean, if my liver goes, I don't want to eat babies to feel better. I don't want to eat babies to see again or walk again or any of that. I'd just as soon go ahead and pass from the scene and let the babies grow up and do better. But that's just me. All right. Now, from the war on the innocent, to the war on America, the FBI, according to Oregon Live, which I believe is a TV station up there in Oregon, the FBI thwarted an attempted terrorist bombing in Portland's Pioneer Courthouse Square before the city's annual Christmas tree lighting on Friday. Now, they don't say Christmas tree lighting here. They just say tree lighting because they might be lighting a tree in Portland for any reason, perhaps for Ramadan or Ishtafan or Fahafakan or any one of those Muslim holidays. I mean, it's a tree lighting is all we're saying. I mean, there were some people. They were lighting a tree. It's winter. Whatever. Anyway, this teenager was a 19-year-old Somali-born U.S. citizen. Have you seen the fella's picture on the internet? This is exactly the type of fellow that should be going through the body scanner or getting the hand down the crotch at the airport. I mean, all I see are pictures of like 10-year-old boys and nuns and elderly school teachers being patted down by the TSA. Meanwhile, Mohammed Osman Mohammed. I mean, this guy is a walking profile. His name is, he's got Mohammed Osman, he's got Mohammed twice in his name. Mohammed Osman Mohammed. He's a Somali-born U.S. citizen. He was arrested. The FBI set him up with a fake bomb that he actually tried to detonate. Meanwhile, the TSA insists on groping the crotches of everyone except people who have Mohammed twice in their name. I know it's Bastille Day, but that's all I can ever understand from that song. Anyway, this show is not going very well. I think that the adrenaline rush of being at the top of a ladder at midday today and surviving several near collapses has left me a bit drained. And the news of the day is simply, it's simply not having much of an effect on me because I almost died three times today. So you'll have to bear with me. Let's go to the war file. Perhaps the war file will motivate me. This is from Reuters. North Korean leader Kim Dong Il and his fat son and successor Kim Jong Un visited the artillery base where shells were fired at a South Korean island just hours before the attack. Yeah, North Korea's attack on Yongpyeong Island killed two South Korean Marines, and more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, two civilians. That was last Tuesday. They say that it was probably ordered by Kim Dong or the Young Dong fat boy himself there in North Korea. And I believe this is the first time the North Koreans have killed civilians. I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of border tensions over the years, but I don't recall civilians being blown to bits by the North. And by the way, Reuters tells us just before the sinking of a South Korean warship back in March, the South Korean military had confidential information that Kim Dong Il met the director of the General Reconnaissance Bureau there, to whom the order to sink the ship would have been given. So this, you know, the news media and smarter folks than I are pointing out that this is all designed to bolster Young Dong's military, to burnish his military bona fides before he's installed as the next leader there, dear leader, there in North Korea. And so daddy's taking him around the country, visiting military bases, and then, you know, lobbing bombs from those bases onto innocent people. And this will, I suppose, make his son to appear to be a great wartime leader, despite the fact that he's just a pudgy, pimply-faced little punk. You know, I'm of the... This happens every year, you know. The North Koreans, they want grain for the winter. They know that the West are a bunch of weak saps, so consumed with their own entertainment and inability to pay their bills, that if North Korea just acts the part, that someone will come in and offer them enough grain to get through the winter so that their slaves don't all die. And so they do this every year. But the thing is you never know when something like this is going to spin out of control. You start dropping bombs on civilians. Well, you know, the South Koreans may decide to start dropping bombs on the North. And then, well, you just never know where that leads. It's not good. And, I just want to reiterate my call on the Chinese to please, you know, get control of your mad dogs down there in South Korea. Here we go. Did I say North Korea? Did I say South Korea? I meant North Korea. You know what I meant. It's the adrenaline rush. It's drained all my energy, my ability to focus. All right. And case in point, from Newsmax, former President Jimmy Carter has urged President Barry Ho, Barack Hussein Obama, to engage in negotiations with North Korea after hearing about North Korea dropping bombs on innocent civilians. Jimmy Carter's knee-jerk reaction? Well, let's talk. Again, from Newsmax, noting North Korea's attack of South Korea this week, the former president, Jimmy Carter, pointed out that this isn't the first such action or military threat. He says, quote, Pyongyang has sent a consistent message that during the direct talks with the United States, it's ready to conclude an agreement to end its nuclear program, put them all under IAEA inspection, and conclude a permanent peace treaty to replace the temporary ceasefire of 1953. We should consider responding to this offer. The unfortunate alternative is for North Korea's leaders to take whatever actions they consider necessary to defend themselves from what they claim to fear most, a military attack supported by the United States, along with efforts to change the political regime. Hi, I'm Jimmy Carter. I don't know why I tried to do that. Anyway, so Jimmy Carter wants to capitulate and go over there and bow and scrape and, I don't know, bring a couple of sacks of grain and just keep playing the game. And I hope Barry Ho doesn't take his advice, for crying out loud. So meanwhile, as we've just talked about the North, North Korea and all of that, war, people trying to blow up a Christmas tree lighting in Portland, Oregon. So our military, you would think, is on a very keen and high state of alert at this point to try to defend us. Well, what was the military's main focus during this past week? Well, let's go to the Associated Press, Dateline San Francisco, California. According to reports from the Defense Department, no U.S. service members have been discharged for being open homosexuals in the month since the DOD adopted new rules surrounding the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy there for the United States military there at the Pentagon. Under new rules adopted back in October, Defense Secretary Robert Gates put authority for signing off on dismissals for homos only in the hands of the three service secretaries. That means you have to be such a freak that it gets the attention of the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the Secretary of the Navy, before you get discharged. And so no homosexuals have been discharged here in the past month. According to a Pentagon spokeswoman, Cynthia, she says no discharges have been approved since October 21st. Oh, the fags are still defiling one another. Don't get me wrong. But we've not discharged anyone for perforating the rectal tract of a fellow soldier. Or whatever it is they do. I mean, it's all very lovely and pretty and colorful in the abstract, but when you actually start to delve into the practices of these deviant perverts, well, it gets pretty creepy. Do you know that when I was in the military, so a long time ago, adultery was still a crime that was actually it was a crime that was actually punished. I saw it happen to someone in my unit who was prosecuted for adultery. Yeah, that was a long time ago. I doubt they prosecute. And just to let you folks know, I think that both adultery and homosexuality should be prosecuted in the military and in the civilian world. It would lead to just a less disgusting culture. Okay, let's just leave it at that. Anything else here from the AP? Defense Secretary Gates has urged the Senate to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Seek, Don't Smell policy before the new Congress takes office. He wants them to do it in the lame duck session. And by the way, Bill Gates, no, but not Bill Gates, I'm sorry, although he loves homos too. What's this moron's name? Robert Gates, Secretary of Defense. He was appointed by George W. Bush. Who doesn't mind rubbing elbows in the pews of his United Methodist Church down there in Texas either? Hey, you know, a few homos come in, you know, it's all right. Jesus loves everybody. Anyway, all right. Now, speaking of despicable, deviant, perverted homosexuals, let me draw your attention to Trenton, New Jersey. This is from an Associated Press story. There's a new law in New Jersey against bullying in schools. It was approved last week there in New Jersey. And I said that it's a law against bullying. The AP says it's against bullying. But my instincts told me that this is all about fags. That's what my gut told me. It's all about fags. Now, Governor Chris Christie has not indicated whether or not he'll sign this new anti-bullying law. And let's hope that Governor Christie maintains his promising tenure by not signing the anti-bullying law. And you ask yourself, Doug, why would you be against bullying? And I'm against bullying. I was bullied in school. I was bullied. I was small and skinny. And I was bullied by bigger kids. But it wasn't because I was no queer, okay? it was because I was skinny and kind of funny looking, and I moved to Texas from New York. That's all it took back in the day. Anyway, this bill in New Jersey would require anti-bullying programs in public schools and language in college codes of conduct to address bullying. Schools would have to form teams to shape policies and review how bullying is handled. Bullying of gay youth has gotten a lot of attention, but the bill also pertains to students picked on for a number of other reasons, not just because they're queer or suspected of being queer. See, I told you. This is all about homosexuals. And teaching kids that beating up homosexuals is wrong, which I agree with. Beating up homosexuals is wrong. Should not be tolerated. But if in the course of teaching kids not to beat up homosexuals, you're going to tell them that the reason you can't beat up homosexuals is because they're normal, well, that's where we diverge. Yeah, that's where we part ways. And that's what this is all about. It's all about teaching kids that homosexuals are normal and they're good and they're just like you and I. Instead of saying homosexuals are disgusting, deviant perverts who should be pitied and they shouldn't be beaten up, but they should be considered mentally ill and they should be shunned. That's what we should teach our kids. Well, that's what I'm teaching mine. And what's interesting is that, I'm not teaching my kids that yet because they're not even aware of all of this. At least we hope not. But the interesting thing about a young person is when they do become aware of it, they're initially disgusted. And you don't have to, like, force them to understand that, you know, boys who do that with other boys, it's gross. They pretty much get it. You have to educate kids out of their instinctual, natural, God-given revulsion towards homosexuality. And that's just what they're trying to do here in New Jersey, and I hope Governor Christie does not sign this bill. 16-year-old Matthew Zimmer of Ridgewood, New Jersey, who says he's been bullied because he's gay, testified before the legislative committee. What did I tell you? This is all about normalizing allegedly gay youth. I mean, whoever's telling a 16-year-old that he's a homosexual, that person should be punished with extreme prejudice. All right, I'm not going to quote this 16-year-old because now I feel sorry for him. Someone's been telling him he's a queer. I don't want to make fun of him, the poor kid. It's just sad. It's just sad. All right, let's just take a break. Set the scene for you. Circa 1975. Stevie Vai's mom goes to the school counselor and says, "I don't know exactly what the problem is with Stevie. He likes to hang out in his room all day and all night, and all he does is play his guitar." Now, what could have happened is the school counselor could have said, "Well, Stevie, come on over here. Sit on my lap. Have you thought about the fact that perhaps you're gay?" Instead of just saying, "Hey, Stevie likes to play guitar. Let him lock himself in his room and maybe someday he'll make a go of it." So let's be thankful that the anti-bullying edicts of the modern generation weren't enforced then, or Stevie might have ended up in a bathhouse instead of playing guitar. I mean, you could have destroyed the kid. I'm sure he was a weird kid, all right? He looks weird. And, you know, if you tell a kid like that, maybe you're gay, maybe he would have put his guitar down and, well, it would have just been sad, a general loss to civilization.
Who are you to say that he's not, though?
Who am I to say he's not? Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Just let the kid be. If the kid's weird, let him be weird. Don't tell him he's a queer, for crying out loud. Maybe he's a genius savant. Anyway, let's move on to the politics file. Alan Simpson, a thief who's been a thief in Congress for, I think he was a thief for like 60 years. He stole trillions of dollars from the American people, who participated in the theft. And now he's been called upon to solve our economic crisis. He's the co-chair of President Obama's debt commission, Alan Simpson of Wyoming. I know he's a conservative Republican. Don't get mad at me. But the problem is, ladies and gentlemen, is the so-called conservative Republicans who've been serving for my entire lifetime have been robbing me blind, along with the Democrats. And so Alan Simpson, though, he's participated in this new draft proposal, according to the Tribune, the Cheyenne Tribune up there in Wyoming. He's participating in this draft proposal to help erase the nation's $13 trillion debt. Pretty tall order. I like the quote. He said he's been getting a lot of hate mail because he said he wants to cut Social Security, wants to cut Medicare, he wants to raise taxes. He wants to take away a lot of the goodies that the geezers have been promised by themselves. One class of geezers has promised the other class of geezers to take care of them when they're old, and now they realize that they're out of money. And so Alan Simpson says, quote, "We had the greatest generation. I think this is the greediest generation," he said, unquote. Now he's talking about the generation that came after him because he's like 112 years old. But he's talking about the baby boomers. They're the greediest generation. And I would agree with that. Anyway, Alan Simpson says you don't want to listen to extremists. He says that's the problem with people. He says, you don't want to listen to Keith Olbermann or Rush Limbaugh or Rachel Maddow or whoever that is, or Glenn Beck. They're entertainers. They couldn't govern their way out of a wet paper sack. That's what Alan Simpson says. Alan Simpson, who participated in perhaps the greatest crimes of all of human history here in America. He participated. He was there. He was a part of it. He cast votes. He participated in the robbing of a generation, the butchering and killing of an innocent generation. He participated in all of it. Yet he says that that it's the conservative talk show hosts who couldn't govern their way out of a wet paper sack. Now, I don't know about Rachel Maddow. I'm not sure who that is. I've heard of Keith Olbermann. I think he's a sportscaster. I'm not sure how he got in there. But anyway, Glenn Beck's probably going to try to prove to Mr. Simpson that he can govern his way out of a wet paper sack. You know that I've predicted that Glenn's running for president. He's either running for president or shadow president. He'll just pull the strings. And it's sad to say, but that might be a better position than we found ourselves in quite some time if Glenn Beck is the puppeteer. It's just sad. All right. More from the politics file. This is from the extreme irony file. On Wednesday last week, at least five local residents filed separate objections to the candidacy of Rahm Emanuel for the mayoral office of the city of Chicago based on his eligibility. Yeah, they're saying he's not eligible because he wasn't a resident. Now, Mr. Emanuel's critics argue that he left Chicago giving up a requirement that he have legal residency in the city for at least 1 year before running for mayor. The elections in February, Emanuel only returned to Chicago this fall, making it impossible for him to have lived in Chicago for a year before the election, making him technically ineligible to be the mayor. But Mr. Emanuel's campaign says that Emanuel's intent was always to return to Chicago, and that's it. It's his intent that should ultimately define his legal status. This is so weird. It's like the Lisa Murkowski debacle up there in Alaska, where the Democrat machine there is basically saying anyone that entered any name with an L or an M in it obviously intended to vote for Lisa Murkowski, even though the law says it has to be spelled exactly the way her name appears on her write-in paperwork. And it's just funny that this ruling class, they seem to not want the rules to apply to them. Even the mundane rules, the day-to-day rules that, you know, who has ever questioned anybody's eligibility for office? I mean, has that ever even come up? Not in my lifetime that I can recall. But here we've got Barry Ho, whose mom was in Kenya and Indonesia, and who knows where this guy was born. And that whole story has been, you know, fizzling and festering under the surface for a couple of years now. And it's just ironic that Rahm Emanuel finds himself in the interesting position of being declared ineligible. Anyway, as if I care, because I really don't. But speaking of former Obama friends and allies and co-laborers, let's see here. According to, this is from rawstory.com, a website that I'm not familiar with. I don't know if I can recommend you even go there. Robert DeShane has been arrested on charges of soliciting sex from a minor. The 48-year-old DeShane was a senior advisor to Barack Obama's presidential campaign in 2008. He was arrested in Gaithersburg, Maryland, earlier this month. And he was recently the chief of staff of Democratic Representative Steve Rothman there in New Jersey. I don't know if this falls under the bullying, the new bullying laws or not there in New Jersey. I mean, internet solicitation of perverted deviant acts upon a minor. I don't think that's considered bullying in New Jersey. I think that's considered fine form, especially if you adopt the young child before you violate the child there in New Jersey. Anyway, anybody shocked that a former Obama campaign advisor is a child molester? I'm not shocked. All right. Now, the fruits of the current administration and administrations dating back, about 100 years, from the Domestic Tranquility File, reports of gunshots at Country Villa Healthcare Center came about noon on November 22nd, and within a few minutes, officers arrived from the CHP and three local police departments inside. What basically is an old folks' home. They found Clara Laird dead of a single gunshot wound to the head and found her husband Roy in a nearby chair with a .38 caliber revolver in his pocket. Lair gave no trouble to officers who arrested him. The couple's daughter said that her mind was gone. She was in late-stage Alzheimer's, and it was a mercy killing. So this is weird about the baby boomer generation. Wait a minute, how old was this guy? Oh, he's 86. That doesn't qualify as a baby boomer generation. Hey, what strikes me as odd is on the one hand, you have people saying they want the right to assist in the suicide of their sick loved one. But on the other hand, they want to experiment on the bodies of innocent people and basically consume their bodies in an effort to improve their quality of life. Truly a schizophrenic generation. No doubt. Disturbing. All right. Let's go to the justice file. From NBC in Los Angeles, a pigeon crashed through the windshield of a California police helicopter last Tuesday and slammed into the pilot's face. The pilot was forced to make an emergency landing at a middle school. The pilot had minor injuries and was released after treatment at a Los Angeles hospital. Wow. Pretty impressive. First of all, that the pigeon made it through the windshield of a helicopter. Wow. That's one tough pigeon. And then that the pilot managed to land the bird. Hi. Hi, Lexi. Do you want to be on the radio? Do you want to be on the radio? Alright. Anyway, why do I bring this up in the justice file? Had the bird caused a crash? Oh, the helicopter was responding to a robbery call when the pigeon crashed through the windshield. So had the pigeon caused an accident and the helicopter crashed, the people responsible for the robbery should have been charged with murder in a proper justice system. Because any ancillary damage you do in the commission of a crime, you're guilty of that as well. All right. Do I have anything else? Yeah. A lot. I could do 10 more stories on murder and death and destruction, but apparently I'm running out of time. Speaking of running out of time, from WorldNet Daily, a new poll taken for the occasion of the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible reveals that a majority of those under 35 in the United Kingdom don't even know what the King James Bible is. They don't even know it exists. The poll was done by the Christian Institute over there in the UK, and their report said that it's clear that, quote, there has been a dramatic drop in knowledge in a generation. Well, there's been an explosion of information, but a dramatic drop in knowledge, especially the knowledge that leads to salvation from the coming fire. Well, that's it. That's the Weekly Worldview. I'm glad to have made it through this show. I can tell you that it does not compare to teetering on a ladder and saving one's own life. But I appreciate you hanging with me through it, and I'll be back with you next week, Lord willing. I want to thank the folks at KGOV at Denver Bible Church, the folks at Personhood USA and American Right to Life, and of course I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.